Break the ether a little bit. Good morning, all of you. Welcome. May you have another blessed day that we have been having these days together. So very happy to be in the company of all of you. Really, not as a formality, but truly. And to be sharing together again, sacred time, sacred space. Sacred sharing. So today we continue being carried by the waves of the different topics we are sharing. I've been talking about sacred vulnerability, about how to embody honesty in our relationships. We have been talking about divine love in daily acts last evening, how we can integrate, express bhakti in our everyday life, basically, in every single small act and gesture, how in principle, in potential, we can give our full self through every single act that we are being offered. So today, I'd like to continue sharing some reflections, topics we have been already exploring, but they always beg for more excavation. So we'll talk today about holding space in connection to listening, compassionate listening, and radical presence. That has been the title that has been put. So we have to honor the title now. Holding space, compassionate listening, and radical presence. As you know, I like the word radical a lot, to the point that I had to name one book with that word, radical personalism. Radical is a beautiful word, which sometimes is a little misunderstood because people here think, oh, radical means this extreme. A radical means from the Latin radix, which means root. So something radical is something to the root, something to the core. So you can be radically honest, honest to the core, to the marrow, as they all say in English, right? Loving. Radically merciful, radically compassionate. They are radical in that way, radically beautiful. So today we will be talking about radical presence, what it means to be present to each other, to reality, to ourselves in a radical way, and how that ties to the idea of listening, to the idea of holding space, different ways to talk about the same thing in one way. But sometimes we need to speak about the same thing from many angles, so we catch one of those at least. We may miss many of them, but one we hope that, okay, this one will enter, right? So we were talking yesterday, right? How we can express bhakti through any single act, through every small, quote unquote, small daily gesture that can be in itself bhakti, that can be a way of connecting lovingly with the divine and with reality. And interestingly, one of the main expressions of bhakti, not to say the first one, is listening. There are different lists of bhakti practices, and one of those begin with shravan, right? Shravan, kirtanam, vishnu smaranam, palasevanam, bandhanam, archanam, dasyam, sakyam, atmanibedanam. I won't ask you to repeat, really, no problem. But the first one is shravan. Shravan means listening. And sometimes we think, okay, yes, listening to a class. Yes, of course. Listening to the names of Krishna. Yes, of course. But why to stop there? Why to stop the listening there? There's always something to listen at every moment. There's always had something happening. As we were saying the other day, I remember we did a podcast with Krishna Kshetra Swami. And the title was Dialogical Vaishnavism. And we were speaking about how the nature of reality is dialogical, which means there's always a dialogue going on. There's always a conversation. If we have the ears to listen, we can be part of that dialogue, conversation, symphony, song. So listening is very important, and listening is often quite underestimated or taken for granted, I will say. We'll say, yeah, listening, of course. I listen. Are you sure? No? There are degrees of listening. Of course, we listen, but there are degrees of listening. And there's always a new degree of listening that we're invited to embrace that probably we have not yet embraced. So, despite we may be listening on some level, it's good to remain open to acknowledge I can listen yet in a deeper level. I can be more present. I can hold more space. Gradually. Remember a few years ago, I took part of one, maybe you have heard about Sattva Talk Foundation.
Yes.
Okay, so I took part of one of the retreats that Dira Govinda and his team organized, and that was in Denver, United States, 2 years ago. Of course, many beautiful things shared there. In this connection, one quote comes to my mind that he shared about Paul Tillich. He's a Christian author. I knew him, but I didn't know this quote that I love. Very simply, Paul Tillich will say, "The first duty of love is to listen." Stay with that line for a moment. Try to let that sutra sink in. The first duty of love is to listen. Again, we want to love. We want to love, as we say yesterday. Loving God is not only loving God, it's loving everything because everything exists in connection to God. And the first duty of loving everything, therefore, is to listen to everything. To listen to nature, to listen to my body, to listen to sages, to my friend, to the neighbor in front of me, to God in my heart, to daily circumstance that come in our life. What is this telling me? In India, they have this saying, Atithi Devo Bhavam. Very interesting. Atithi Devo Bhavam means you have to honor an uninvited guest as if it's God himself. Of course, there is a whole culture in India of honoring guests, not only in India, of course, but in India. So an uninvited guest may knock your door. You were not expecting that person. That person is to be treated as God himself. Which for me also implies that's how God Himself comes to our life on a daily basis, uninvited. Because probably we don't invite Him that often. Or sometimes we invite Him, as we were talking these days, with lots of conditions. Krishna, come to my life in this way, at this time of the day, in this mood. Give me your mercy in this form, in this shape, in this color, in this smell. In this way, you're invited. Right. It's too many conditions we are putting. Sometimes he needs to come uninvited and take us by surprise. So sometimes in a daily life, we receive these situations which are out of the plan or out of the agenda. And we are to treat those uninvited guests as God himself. Again, this has to do with listening. Again, the first duty of love is to listen. So what is this telling me? No. How can I find the divine here? What do I have to listen here? In one sense, listening is love in its most practical and embodied form. And we are talking about embodiment in this retreat. Okay, how can I express love to someone in a very concrete way? Listen to that person. Be present fully as much as you can. That's a sign of love. I can tell you I love you so many times, but if I'm not listening to you, you are sending a short-circuiting message. I love you, but I don't want to listen to you. It's like, interesting idea of love you have. Love begins with listening. That's why we in Bhakti say Shravan. Thank you, Kirtanam, Vishnu, Smaranam, etc. First Shravan, first listen. What's already trying, what's trying to be told to me, what's trying to come to me instead of asking for more. Sometimes I joke to devotees, like sometimes we are very anxious in asking, praying to Krishna, give me this, but already so much has come. But we are not listening, we are not seeing, listening, seeing whatever example you want to use. And we keep asking for more. And Krishna said, I keep sending, but what are you doing with that? Are you listening to my messages? Or sometimes it's kind of tragic. We may pray to the divine again, give me your grace. And he's here as we're, I don't know with whom we were speaking, they say, watch out. I think Shamlal was saying, you pray something to God from a book you were reading on prayer, right? Okay, watch out what you're asking for because your prayers won't go unanswered. But sometimes, of course, we ask for grace, and grace comes in the way we actually need it, not how we were idealizing and romanticizing, but what you actually need. And if we are not listening attentively, we will think, oh, well, what's that? And we'll start to pray again. Oh, Krishna, give me your grace to protect me from that stuff that is coming. And Krishna is like, that was my grace. No, that was my answer to your previous prayer. And now you are praying to me again to counteract the answer to your previous prayer. That's a very interesting relational dynamics. You ask me for something, I give it. Now you ask for me to counteract what I gave you as a result of your request. That's my okay, interesting person. Okay. Krishna is very loving, very patient, still has hope in each one of us. So he never left a message in our heart as Paramatma, like, I'm fed up with you, find yourself another Paramatma. Goodbye. Too much. Stop contradicting yourself. You pray to me, accept the result of that. Come again, all this has to do with listening, with paying attention. What's going on? What's coming? How to honor? What's the necessity of the moment? How to respond to what I'm being called for? Today, interestingly, also we are in connection somehow to this. We are celebrating today in our Vaishnava calendar. We have had many celebrations these days, Bhaktivinoda Thakur's appearance day 2 days ago, Haridas Thakur's disappearance day yesterday. Today we are celebrating the Sannyas Leela of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, interestingly, among other things also. So it's interesting, no? Because Sri Chaitanya's Sannyas Leela, of course, it can be explained in so many levels, the external reasons for his Sannyas Leela, the internal reasons for his Sannyas Leela, how his Sannyas Leela has to do with the internal reasons for his descent, trying to repay back Radha's love. That's another exploration. But in general, the Sannyas Leela of Mahaprabhu has to do with listening. Because Sri Chaitanya was here on earth as Nimai Pandit, Vishwambar. He was not a sannyasi at one point, but he was listening. Paying attention, what's the need of the moment? I'm trying to give something. I'm coming. Mahaprabhu is Krishna himself, Yuga avatar, coming on this particular age of Kali to deliver a particular unique gift. And he's trying, and he's seeing that some things are happening that, I need to make some adjustment here. So he was listening, he was reading the zeitgeist. The climate of the time, what to do. And before taking sannyas, he was not properly understood by some people, and he felt, oh, this may get in the way of my dispensation, my gift. So then he thought, I will accept sannyas. In this particular time and society and place, people pay some, in that particular time, society and place, people pay special attention to sannyasis. Maybe now it's a little different, I will say. Sometimes people is sannyas, oh, another sannyas, okay. Sometimes, because there are different times. Sometimes people misrepresent the order, and then some people become, like once I remember talking to someone who told me, Maharaj, Maharaj, I really like you, but there is a problem. Which problem? You are a sannyas. I have layers of acquired trauma with sannyasis. So that becomes an obstacle. I mean, it's not a problem with the sannyas ashram itself, but with sometimes related misrepresentations. So at sometimes the best thing is to establish the sannyas order. At some other time, it may be the best thing to deconstruct the sannyas order. And at some time, bringing it back from another place. These are the cycles. of creation, maintenance, and dissolution in different things. So Mahaprabhu at that time listened, pay attention to the audience, to the climate of the times, and thought, okay, I will accept sannyas. That will help my project, my campaign. So we are celebrating that today, Mahaprabhu's accepting of sannyas, which again is very much connected to what the Bhagavatam call becoming a Desha Kala Vibhagavit. Desha Kala Vibhagavit. Desha means place, Kala means time, Vibhaga means like circumstance. So sometimes translate time, place, and circumstance. Bit. Like a proper discerner of time, place, and circumstance. What to do at any given moment. That requires discernment. It's not like, because sometimes people ask, okay, what to do, Maharaj, in this situation? And they wait for the universal formula, so to say. And I can see so many times the frustration in people when I tell them, I start my answer saying, it depends. Oh, again. Again, it depends. Give me the answer, how to do it, and how it will work always. Life doesn't work like that. It depends. We have to get a taste for that, those two words. It depends. Each case, situation, time, place, it will depend. Your own same journey, different times of your life, you will have to think differently and act differently. So all that is inviting for developing criterion and discernment. But all that happens listening. You cannot discern if you don't pay attention to what's going on around me, inside me, outside of me. First, you have to, again, be present. Then you can discern what's the best step to take. So we were talking yesterday, right? How bhakti we can offer, we can capture Krishna's heart just by a flower or a drop of water. Well, we can also capture Krishna's heart or someone else's heart by presence. No, presence is in itself an offering. It's in itself a gift. Again, we shouldn't underestimate that as a huge, valuable gift. If you offer someone else your full presence, your full listening, empathy, woo, that's so valuable. That's more valuable than so many external things we may receive or give. So presence in itself is an offering. So you say, yes, the relationships our service. Sometimes we don't think like that. We think, okay, service is doing stuff. Developing my relationship with someone is not a service. Yes, it is. Doing an offering has to be some concrete object on a plate and I have to move it seven times around. Then it's an offering. Yes, but also presence. Because if you are not present when you are doing this with a plate, Krishna may be wondering why this guy is moving the whole thing in circles. His mind is somewhere else. Where are you? Or what are you doing? You're doing like this, and your mind is going like just want your presence here. And Krishna is always present. Again, Sishirada Murli, that they're always present for us, always attentive, always open, always willing. So just bringing back presence is a way of reciprocating to what we are already receiving from them. It's always very humbling and important, at least for me, to remind myself of this. You know, if I'm, I don't know, chanting japa, I'm not starting the conversation. They started. My chanting is an attempt to reciprocate their kickstart, no, they need their initiative. If I'm praying to God, it's because first God addressed me, so to say. It's not like I'm the one starting the conversation. And now God has to reply. No, no. If I'm doing it, it's because they already threw their embrace to me. No? And now I'm trying to give it back. As I said the other day, we are not practicing bhakti so Krishna loves us. We are practicing bhakti because Krishna loves us and so we can love him back. That's a very different orientation. You understand the difference in the sequence? No? We are not practicing so Krishna loves us. He already loves us. And because we are loved by God, we have the chance of him practicing and trying to return the embrace. And of course, when we return the embrace, he returns the embrace 10 times more, and so on and so forth. In a spiral of ever expanding reciprocation. So again, we are using different words to say the same thing: listening, presence, holding space. I like that quote, that phrase, that's very important. Holding space. It's a very interesting expression. How do you say that in German? Interesting. Yes? Okay. Not able to replicate that, sorry. Holding space. As we say the other day, now we started talking about vulnerability, and we say many times before even talking about vulnerability, you have to hold space so safety is perceived in the air, so to say. So someone feels safe enough to actually be vulnerable. Because being vulnerable is kind of, how do you say in English, is exercise that they jump with the rope and they then fall like free fall or whatever. So I need to know that there will be space, holes, some safe space that will receive me. And I won't jump and crash and be reduced to ashes. So holding space means that, not like you really are present with the level of empathy and acceptance that the other person feels safe enough to do this free fall, which otherwise could feel like this is the scariest thing that I could do in my life. But if you have that trust, that confidence, okay, I can do it. So we need to do that. We need to be held in safe space, and we need to hold space for others. And that's, again, it's a big discipline. It's not so easy. It sounds like a cool phrase. Let's hold space. But it's tapasya. Because holding space for the other means I'm here accompanying you, and I'm not judging you. Now, as we say, I'm not fixing you. I'm not impatient trying to get you to realize what you need to realize. So many times that have you're talking with someone and you're thinking in your mind, the person brings, oh yeah, I have this particular whatever situation. And your mind is like, oh yeah, this is the problem. You should do this as a solution. And you already have your own formula in your mind. And you're like, come on, say it.
It's not about me.
Exactly. Exactly. And even if what you see that this ideal solution for the other person is accurate, still the person has to reach that place for by themselves. You cannot just tell the other person, you should do this with your life, and like this, and in this way, do it. If they hadn't reached that place naturally by themselves, still it's information. It's not a transformation, right? So how to accompany someone, again, we were using this word, it says witnessing someone else's journey. So it's like a partnership. Like, I'm here accompanying you on the journey. You have to do your part. I'm doing my part. I'm holding space for you to feel whatever you need to feel. Sometimes you need to express emotions, to be in silence, to say something. And we just need to know there is someone there holding space for us. Sometimes we don't need someone else telling us what to do with our lives. Just having that safety, there's that person there, no matter what. And we need those type of relationships in our lives. I was listening the other day, a podcast, someone called that the 3 a.m. friendships. Like those friends that you know you can call them at any time of the day, basically. And they will be there for you. You call them 3 a.m., it's like, yeah, yeah. It's not like someone, why are you calling me at this time? I'm sleeping now. Two. No, that's not 3 a.m. French. Like, no? Emergency, I press the bad signal. Oh, I'm here for you. What do you need? Yeah, holding space. But we need to have that. And there's lots of research in that people who have the people in their life, they are way more resilient. They have way more hope. They know they do not reach rock bottom because they know there is someone holding space for them, no matter what, right? So there's not the fear, oh, but if I come to my friend with this stuff, will he or she hold space for me? Will I go into free fall? When we have that certainty, you know, that person is there no matter what, there is so much empowerment, so much foundation. The gift of being received without conditions. Oof. Such a relief. Again, God, Krishna, Radha Krishna, however we may like to address the divine, they are loving us in this way. But sometimes, again, if we haven't had an experience of that, then we need to embody that for each other. I remember once in India, I was with a friend and he asked me, yeah, Maharaj, beautiful idea, unconditionally loved by God. But if someone never experienced that, I cannot tell them Krishna loves you unconditionally because they are like, that's Chinese for me. What are you talking about? I don't know what's that? What's unconditional love? So how to make them experience that? You have to give them that gift. We have to embody a glimpse, an appetizer of God's unconditional love.
We
Or
have
the other
no frame of
person.
reference in our life.
Exactly. Like I said, if we have no frame of reference, we need to have, of course, that experience. We cannot give someone something that they have not received yet. And so it's for some of us a place to begin is to realize I need to be loved unconditionally. I lack that experience.
Sometimes we might not even recognize that it's unconditional love because maybe from our traumas or that we can't even believe it, that we're suspicious of it.
As we say the other day, it's too good to be true. Sounds too ideal. So in the beginning, we'll be like, even if it feels nice, we'll be like, it looks too nice. There must be some. You are just waiting for the betrayal or for the tragedy or for the abuse because that was our previous experience. No? The candy came first, and then came the axe or whatever. So we will be like. Like a scared animal, so to say, like someone tries to caress and you bite. But you actually need the love, but you cannot still believe that that's possible because every time someone before caress you, it ended up some in another place. So it's part of the journey, of course, right? And it may take time. It may take time. And again, that's part of the unconditional love for the other person, being there for the person, even when you see the other person is still like distrusting. Afraid, measuring, calculating, even attacking back. And one should be able to understand and be compassionate and hold space for that process also to happen. You cannot tell that person, come on, believe me. Again, it's like if I'm telling you are in safe space, and you're like, I don't know, I need to experience that. No, you are in safe space. Come on, be quick, realize that. The more I insist on that, the more you will hold back. But if I hold space patiently and compassionately in time, you end up realizing, oh, this is for true. Oh, I waited one day, 2 weeks, 1 year. This person hasn't betrayed me yet. Okay, I may give it a try one more time. And we open, as I said the other day, why open 0.1%? Oh, it's working. Open 0.2%. Maybe then we have some reaction and we close again. Altogether, just in case, no mechanisms like defense mechanism, survival instinct. So it's back and forth, back and forth. I mean, it's okay. It's exhausting, but it's okay. And Krishna, our heart is witnessing all that, as I say before. And he's not ashamed of us or embarrassed with us, no? Because sometimes we may go to those places. So Krishna must be so embarrassed with me. No, that I'm doing all this back and forth, which is a mess. No, he's holding space. No. Kindly in our hearts. We are next to him. These two birds that the Shvetashvatara Upanishad speak. Krishna's one of those birds holding space. That's a way of, Paramatma sometimes is described as witnessing. Another way of saying witnessing is holding space. Because it's not witnessing indifferently. Right? Because you can also witness something, who knows with which attitude, no? Like totally removed, totally emotionally disconnected, totally indifferent or with your own agenda and witnessing something to take some advantage of what you are witnessing, whatever. No. God in the heart is witnessing by holding space, no? And trying compassionately to create the most positive influence without canceling our own free will. Because also that's the thing. It's not that Krishna loves us so much that he jumps on our free will, cancels it, and we don't have a choice, and he chooses for us to love him. That wouldn't be too loving, right? So he allows us space to choose, and that's a risk because many times we choose any other thing but him. And that's so painful. It's not that Krishna's in the heart, I don't feel anything for his suffering. No. God is compassionately suffering with us. But
Sounds
still there.
tragic.
Still there. Sorry?
Sounds tragic when you say it like that. It's the real tragedy.
That's the ultimate tragedy. I actually, literally speaking, I speak about that in my next book, literally with those terms. Let me see which exact expression I use, but it's basically that. The greatest possible tragedy. Yeah. Which it is, you are infinitely loved by Krishna, but you live as if that's not happening. Not again, not to feel even worse about ourselves and fall into a depression cycle. But in one sense, it's a tragedy. Of course, it's not an eternal tragedy. There is always a hope and a chance to redeem ourselves. But it has its tragic element. You are already loved, but we live as if that's not the case. So, again, not to motivate our spiritual practice negatively. But yeah, there is a place to acknowledge not only the tragedy, but again, acknowledging how in the midst of that tragedy, we have our unconditional friend holding space for us at every moment. Because that's what Krishna is doing in the heart. Even in the midst of our most tragic decisions, there he is. There they are, holding space, holding space. As we spoke these days about this word darshan. Many times darshan is seen as seeing, or we were Ramananda mentioned the word drishta from the Yoga Sutras, which means to be a witness. But also you have the word drishya, which means to be witnessed. So we are witnessing, but we are being witnessed. So Drishya and Bhaktisiddhanta Sarasvati Thakur will say the word darshan is connected to both. But mainly, he will say, it's to think how I'm being seen by God. Because how much can I see the divine at the beginning? I may not have much capacity. One way in which I can start to see Krishna is by entering into that space in which I reflect how I'm being seen by Krishna with eyes of unconditional love. Of full acceptance. So that's darshan. I am being seen through the lenses of unconditional love by God. One name for Krishna is Animesha in the Bhagavatam. Animesha means he who never blinks. Blinks. So like he's watching you with eyes of unconditional love, and those eyes never blink. No, there's no even the slightest interruption to that holding space, to that glance, like Jagannath. No blinking. That's beautiful.
So what is the word in Sanskrit?
Animesha.
Animesha.
Yeah. Like Yugaitam Nimeshena. So Nimesha means like a burst, like the time that it take, like the time that a blink takes. So animism is no blinking. So we worship a non-blinking God.
He doesn't wear shoes.
No, he's always holding space. He's always glancing at us mercifully.
Deities have so great eyes,
Yeah.
big eyes.
Yeah. And you will never see them blinking. Pay attention. They will never blink. You'll
It's
never see
really
it.
does look like
Yeah, but never, it's not a blink, it's just a nuance to the glance, a sidelong glance, right? So all this, there are all these different ways of trying to give the same idea, right? Like you are being seen by the divine through the eyes of unconditional love. God is holding space at every breath, at every moment. That's why the whole creation can remain in its orbit, because there is a glance that is constantly watching over everything. So we are being seen in that way. We're invited to see based on how we are being seen. So I'm being seen with the eyes of unconditional love. I have to return that glance. I have to extend that glance to others. If Krishna is seeing me with eyes of unconditional love and acceptance, I have to represent, I have to become an ambassador of that glance in how I relate to others. So I have to extend that glance to others and become an ambassador. That's the duty of each one of us. That's what it means to be a member of a parampara. Each one has a contribution to make. It's not like, oh, my Gurudev does everything. I'm so fallen, I cannot do anything. That's false humility. Each one has a duty to do in this life. And the main thing is embody and represent what the gift that you are receiving and extend that to others. That's the main instruction. Yesterday I was listening and an audio lecture of Srila Siddhar Maharaj, and someone asked him, a disciple, he was like, Gurudev, we are receiving so much from you. How, what can you we do to please you? Now, a classical question, how can I please you? How can I serve you? And Srila Siddhar Maharaj will always reply the same way. And that's I've stolen his reply, and that's basically what I say if someone asks me that question. Because it makes full sense. And he say, well, those things that are most important for me and that you feel you have received from me, you embody those things and extend those things to others. That's it. That's it. Like if that's very simple, right? So if something that you receive from your guardian angels has touched and transformed your life, how to please those guardians, embody those same gifts and do not pay back to them, but pay forward. Extend the gift. Parampara, the current. So we are invited to do that as we are being witnessed by our unconditional friend. Krishna says that in the Gita, Suhridam Sarvabhutanam. Bhoktanam Jagnatapasam Sarvaloka Maheshwaram Suhridam Sarvabhutanam. Gyatamam Shantim Rishati. The last verse of fifth chapter of the Gita, he says, I'm the enjoyer of all sacrifices. I'm the controller of all universes. So far, it sounds a little bit like, whoa, that's too much. And now he brings Suhridam Sarvabhutanam. I'm the most unconditional friend of all living entities. I'm a Suhrit. Suhrit means heart. And Su means like very much. So I'm very much a heart friend of everyone. It's a Sarvabhutana of every living being. I'm the best friend of everyone. And then he said, Jnatamam Shantim Richati. When you know that, you can attain peace. In other words, if you don't realize that you are being loved and you have your unconditional friend in your heart, probably you are not peaceful. In other words, we need to have that type of friends in our life to really be in peace. Peace is an important quality. As much as we talk about prema and divine love and ecstasy and divine madness and frenzy, first we need peace. Krishna says in the Gita, you cannot speak about happiness if you don't have peace. Happiness without peace, that's not happiness. That's some type of dopamine shot, dopamine peak you are experiencing with something. Oh, after that, does peace remain there? So that's what we call in Sanskrit sattva. No? Sattva guna will be a mood of balance, a mood of peace. And interestingly, sattva in Sanskrit means beingness. No, sat means to be, being, and tva The prefix twa in Sanskrit is like ness in English, like playfulness, whateverness, right? So sat twa or shakshi twa, tat twa. There are many twas in Sanskrit. All that mean ness. So sat twa, which sometimes we translate as goodness, actually means beingness. So to be in sattva means to be situated in who you are. Basically, to try to enter into that space and who you are, big question. Again, you are someone who is unconditionally loved by Krishna. Because we can reply to that question, who am I, in so many ways. And generally, we tend to go, what I do, as we say, right? I'm a human doing. No, it's not about what you do. But what? About what other people, what I have. Some people think my sense of identity depends on my degree of material possessions. The more I have, the more I am. You are not the human doing, you are not the human having either. Because at the end of the day, nothing belongs to you. The real question is, whom do I belong? Not what belongs to me. It's another way. So that's not how to answer, who am I? What do I do? What do I have? Okay, what do other people think of me? Probably not. Be careful with that one, especially in the age of social media. What do the world think of me? If you post something and they don't like your post enough, maybe your whole sense of self comes down. Oh, nobody loves me. Just 10 likes to my latest post. Oh, that's very fragile sense of self. It depends on social feedback, social media feedback. Okay, who am I? I will reply to that according to what I think of me. That can be the worst option. As many times we are the ruthless critic for ourselves. So how to reply, who am I? Who am I in God's eyes? That's who I am. That's the most accurate picture. Krishna sees us as accurately as possible. And who we are in his eyes, we are a beloved. So that's a very accurate way to say, who am I? I'm a beloved of God. So sattva means that peace, the peace that comes with sattva is entering into that space of beingness. Who am I? I'm the beloved of Krishna. That's my core identity. Everything else is superficial. All these other narrative and voices in my head say, you are worthless, you are useless, you are never enough. You need to earn and to deserve and to impress and to perform and bring the masks. And let's begin the festival of masks again. You are developed already, already happening, infinitely loved. So that's sattva, interestingly. And of course, we, in our tradition, we speak from sattva, we have to make the quantum leap into Sudha-sattva, into transcendence. But first, you have to reach sattva. You have to have a balanced, healthy, holistic life. If not, probably we are practicing spirituality for the wrong reasons. Escapism, denial, who knows what. And when we are able to accept who we are for who we are, and then we can extend that to others again. If I can be who I am, if I can accept myself, I can extend that gift to other people. You are accepted. You are seen. You are loved. You don't need to perform. You don't need to impress. You don't need to become a superhero. No. And paradoxically, when we're accepted for who we are, we can change all the things we need to change. I'm not saying this so you don't need to change anything. I'm saying if you want to change anything, first, you need to accept who you are. That's what Carl Rogers says, famous psychologist. He will say the paradox is you can only change something once you accept yourself first. Because if I'm not accepting where I am, who I am, I cannot change anything because it only begins from who I am.
That's also saying in the emotion-focused therapy. You can just leave a place if you arrived at the place.
Exactly.
Okay.
Beautiful.
You can just leave a place if you arrived at the place.
First, you have to arrive. Then we can speak about leaving.
Yeah.
Yeah, the Bhagavatam, in its own words, will say sue sue adhikari janishta saguna parikirtita. Acknowledge your adhikar, your eligibility or your current capacities. That's real virtue, real beauty. No?
Where is it said?
That's in the 11th canto of the Srimad Bhagavatam, Uddhava Gita. Sue sue adhikari janishta. To be fixed in one's own adhikar, in where you are at this stage of the journey, saguna parakirti. That's real virtue. No? That to do an honest assessment of who am I, where I am, that's, even if it's limited, if it's imperfect, if it's whatever, again, you have to arrive there first. Then we can talk about leaving that place and going somewhere else. So yeah, we need to be present to ourselves, to where I am, so we can extend the gift to others. And I will say that when you give presence to someone, real presence, presence affirms worthiness without words. Right? You follow me? Presence affirms worthiness without words. So if I am with you, I pay attention to you, I value you, I'm affirming your worthiness. You're worthy, you have value. Even if I'm not saying any of that, I'm not saying you're valuable, you're worthy, but I'm fully present to you. I'm investing my time to you. It means I'm saying you value, I care for you, you're important. Because again, we can say it, but if we are not embodying it, the saying goes, it's lip service only. It's not the real thing. And to receive the person, again, there's so much in witnessing other person's journey. It's not just listening to words, but listening to your whole being. Because we can say words, but there's so much nonverbal communication happening. And the research says that in any, I mean, you're listening to a lecture now. I'm opening my mouth a lot. But it is, according to research, what will stick to you most, 80% is the nonverbal language. 20% what came out of my mouth. 80% was not going on with my mouth, with the rest. That's why I move my hands so much. I move my hands a lot, I know, but that's not calculated. It's just what it is.
It's your Latin.
Yeah. So silence. I mean, holding space for the other person, receiving the other person in their fullness, what they say, what they don't say, what say between the lines, what say with gestures, slight glances, movements. So many things are happening. And silence is a way of paying close attention to all that is happening, all the information that is coming in so many degrees. Silence is very important. Sometimes in our tradition, we underestimate silence. I've heard sometimes, but no, silence is for the impersonalists. We don't do silence. We always speak Krishna Katha and Harinam. Yeah, you need some silence. Because silence is listening, actually. It's not that I'm going to, silence doesn't mean stop speaking. Silence means start listening. Right? Silence doesn't mean I'm chastising you. Stop speaking. Silence. Go to the corner. Silence means start listening. Pay attention. If it's too much noise inside, there's no silence. The silence is not only outside, but inside to listen more clearly. What does Krishna say in the Bhagavad Gita? Of all secret things, I'm silence. So he himself is identifying with silence. I'm not different from silence. That's the section of the Gita where he identifies himself with many things. So when it comes with, of all secret things, generally the secret thing is something very valuable. Of all secret things, I'm silence. Like implying many secrets will be revealed through silence. Srila Prabhupada comments in one verse of the Bhagavad, and I quote that in Radical Personalism because there's a section on silence. And Prabhupada says, if in order to make the silence is the practice that will help you to make the most advancement in your life, something like that. He really highlights the importance of silence. And the importance, again, of silence in the context of listening and presence and receiving what's coming. And receiving the person in all their layers and complexity. And I will say that's especially important in the times we are living, where communication has been so flattened, so superficial in terms, it's reduced to a text exchange. I'm losing so much in a text message. I'm not seeing your face, you're not hearing the tone of your voice, not seeing, you're not capturing your energy. And no wonder, it has happened to me many times, and probably to you as well, that I've been having an exchange with someone and the other person, because of not seeing all the, missing all the other layers, they misread my message and they became, whatever, confused or angry, like, why you say this? And I was like, no, no, I didn't mean that. But those were just the words on the screen. We are losing the main part of the nonverbal cues that come when you're really listening, really present to the other person.
At least in a voice message, there's some...
A little bit more yeah, information. Yeah, what to speak when we are in 3D, so to say, holding a space for one another. So there are so many layers of communication. But again, we have to be especially mindful of this in times where everything becomes more and more reduced, not only to a text message, but the words, we have less and less words in our vocabulary, no longer words. Now we use like the emojis. And when we're in front of one another, we don't know how to embody the emoji ourselves. You know, it's like, I will need to show you on a screen like the emoji. This is what I'm feeling now. Right? I mean, we are laughing not to cry, right? Because if it wouldn't be true, you wouldn't laugh. That's my point. So it's a very important point to take, especially again in the culture we are living, which is a culture of hurry, everything faster and faster, half attention. I mean, attention is such a gift. It's a form of worship, as I heard one psychologist say. In fact, in religious circles, you use the expression, you attend services in the church, for example, attending the service, which has come from the word attention. So to put your attention into something or someone is a form of worshiping, form of venerating the other person. If I'm giving you my attention, I'm honoring you, very deeply. And I'm open to rediscover you. That's another word that I love, which is Mahaprabhu uses that in the third person, Shikshastakam, mani namana adena, respect. But again, the original, for us, respect many times is more like you have to respect your parents, or you have to respect. So we don't like respect. No, no, thank you. But the word respect originally is re spesare. Not from Latin. Spesare is like spectacles in English, glasses. And re means again. So respect means look again.
Oh, wow.
So to respect you means I'm looking at you again. I'm not bringing my own assumptions about who you are and I'm putting you in a box. This is, no, I'm rediscovering you at every meeting. That's how I'm showing that I really respect you. No? I'm giving you another chance, but we are giving each other another chance of rediscovering each other over and over. That's how a relationship can be maintained, of course. If you don't rediscover your partner, your friend, and you put each other in boxes, that's over. That's the beginning of the end. So what keeps something vibrant and alive is ongoing rediscovery of each other. So that's what respect mean. Take the time to see the person from another angle.
Curiosity,
yeah, the different words to use the same. Yeah. To enter into a place of surprise, wondering, always fresh. Yeah. We have so many words for that. And then again, we have to do it, we have to take it to practice, right? But it's important, again, especially in times where we are living, where we're always in a rush, our attention span is being reduced more and more, and we need to, how to say, reclaim our attention. It's a sacred tool. It's very important. That's what we can offer to Krishna. My attention, my presence, my focus. So it's very radical in the good sense of the term. No? A good stand of rebelling against the current of the times that is all about quicker and quicker and less attention and less words and less expression. Let's be rebellious to that. Let's be countercultural and culture presence and attention. I mean, if you offer a few moments of unconditional presence to someone, that can heal and transform the life of that person more than any other thing. And that's how I personally like to think about words that sometimes in our community are used, like preaching, which, to be honest, it's not a word I like to use, because it sounds to me more like I'm trying to convert you and to make me part of my own. Yeah. And you need the grace and I'm the one helping you. Like, if I'm not in need of help and in need of conversion, because I'm a Gaudiya Vaishnava, but there are degrees of conversion. I can carry the official name and the cloth, but is my heart converted? How much? So for me, it's more the idea of offer that person a moment of unconditional acceptance. That can transform that person's heart more than even if I get to sell them 3,000 books. Because sometimes by hook or by crook, I can give the book. But did I touch the person's heart? No. Did I give that person an experience of, you are seen, you are accepted unconditionally?
They say people remember how they felt, not what you told them.
Exactly. So again, a moment of full presence can heal more than hours, days, and weeks of distracted company, so to say. It's not about quantity, it's about quality. So, yeah. A few thoughts in connection to this notion of holding space, compassionate listening, radical presence. Again, to each other, to other people, to ourselves at times. It's not just to other people. You also need to listen to yourself, listen to your body, listen to your emotions. So many things are happening at the same time. So many things that we are not aware of. Let's say, like, on a daily basis, I think it's 300 billion cells are being renewed in your body. We have no clue that's going on, but that's happening. Big event. But we are not listening. I mean, we may not be able to listen to that fully. It will be too overwhelming. But my point is, so many things are happening, but we are not paying attention. So if we don't pay attention to something, that does not exist for us. And you may know this famous exercise with the ball. I will spoil the exercise. You can look it in YouTube. But it's famous. There are two groups, three and three. So they... And with ones with black shirts, another with white shirts. So they have a basketball, they are passing the ball. So the exercise for us is, the prompt is, okay, you pay attention. No, it's only one group, I think. Now I'm making a mess. It's only one group. Anyhow, that's the secondary part of the exercise. The prompt is, you look how many times the ball is passed. And they will be moving among themselves and passing the ball. So that's the prompt. So your mind, no, becomes, okay, I have to count how many times the ball. So you pay attention to that. It's like a minute. So you are like 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. After a minute, the exercise is over. So then you are waiting for the question, like, how many times do you pass the ball? And then the question is, did you see the gorilla?
Yeah.
And most people are like, what? 13 times the ball passed. No, but that was not the actual exercise. Did you see the which gorilla? So they rewind the video. And in between them passing, there comes a guy dressed as a gorilla, like dancing in between. But you never saw the gorilla because you were too attentive counting the ball. So that's basically the idea of the exercise, that if to what you're attentive, you miss everything else. It's not existing. in one sense, for all practical purposes. But if you are attentive, that becomes reality. So
I was seeing the
okay. Here we have a good listener, a good holder of space.
And there's also the other extreme, isn't there, Maharaj? Where you're so distracted by everything.
Yeah, of course. But always we cannot be attentive to absolutely everything that is going on. So that's our free will. To what I choose to be attentive, to what I choose to miss at any given moment on one level. No? So each case will be different. But again, if I'm sitting where in what we're talking today, if I'm sitting with you and I'm trying to hold space for you, I know what I should be attentive to. And I shouldn't be like watching my clock and taking my phone and like making gestures like, or like even verbal language. You are talking and I'm still like, or like, like. So it's holding space, no? being present and being comfortable with listening, comfortable with space of silence. We don't do well with silence. No? Many times we need to fill in the spaces with, but so much happens in silence.
This is embodiment, what you just described.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, recently I told some of you I did a 6-month workshop of mentor coaching. Very interesting experience. And it's a lot about holding space for the other person and asking questions and allowing them to reach whatever answers they need to reach. And many times there is allowing them to go through their own inner processes and witness that in silence. And sometimes we will be, I will ask a question to the coachee, to the client, and the person will be like, and stay like this 3 minutes. And I am supposed to hold space. It's not like, hey, return. I have an idea for you. No, I have to honor that person's process. They are thinking, they are internalizing, and they will return a bit. And silence may feel uncomfortable, but it's my own problem why I feel uncomfortable. It's a sacred moment, actually. So it's important. It's important to listen to each other. I know it can be also scary to be fully present because that is life transforming. And sometimes we are afraid of transformation. And there's one quote, there are no more copies there of radical personalism.
There's two left.
Can you give me one? I'm buying one.
I give you a good price.
That's too narcissistic, right? You buy your own. One quote from Carl Rogers that I quoted before, and I'm quoting him here. It's an interesting one. One of those, like I shared yesterday, so fasten your seatbelt. He says, starts heavy. He said, the great majority of us cannot listen. We find ourselves compelled to evaluate because listening is too dangerous. The first requirement is courage. And we do not always have it. If you really understand a person in this way, through attentive listening, if you are willing to enter his private world and see the way life appears to him or her, you run the risk of being changed yourself. This risk of being changed is one of the most frightening prospects most of us can face. So it's interesting because many times we speak about change and transformation, but when the actual time comes for change, it's like, no, I'm holding back to my familiar comfort zone, this security, this what I know, who I am. Change, transformation, oh, no. But listening to someone openly creates that risk. You will be transformed because you are, that person is opening to you. And in order to receive that openness, you need to open. So if you put two open people together, they will be affecting one another. They will be transforming one another. And sometimes that's our greatest fear. So we need to work on that, you know, because it's we need to be transformed with one another. That's what love means, ultimately. It's a very transformative experience. So from theory to practice, one exercise now. Trying to hold space for one another, trying to listen, hopefully not to be terrified about the prospect of being transformed by each other. Did I create enough safe space these 2 days for me to for you to trust me in the next one?
Good job here.
So the idea will be, as you can imagine, nothing very much in line to what we were talking. We will this time put ourselves in groups, in pairs probably, and we'll take turns in the pairs. No? So again, it's not about fixing the other person, about giving advice, preaching, converting, but holding space for the other person. So one person will be sharing something, whatever, something, a challenge, a small joy, anything. It doesn't need to be tragic, ecstatic, something that you need to share, you feel you want to share. 3 minutes. And the other person is embodying today's class, so to say. You're holding space, you are listening, you are not saying anything, okay? You're not interrupting, you're not advising, you should, but just listening, but with presence, not like a bar of, like an iceberg, but you're present there. You're not interrupting, you're not preparing answers, try to observe your mind, try not to judge the other person, to put the person in labels, try to hold space. With your whole presence, with eye contact, with open body language. No? Hopefully you are not like this, listening to the person, no? Or like this. No? But open body contact, receiving the person, gentle silence. Yeah. So 3 minutes like that, one person speaking, the other person listening. And then the same the other way around. We take turns in the other direction. One more thing. Before taking the turn, before shifting, what we can do is when the person finishes speaking after 3 minutes, the person who held space can briefly summarize 1 minute what they heard, and to mirror back what the person was saying. Right? You don't need like to copy paste, but in your own words, to return. Like basically, as I say, what I heard you saying is this.
The essence of what we
Yeah. Like to give back, to show further presence by giving feedback to what you replicating in your own words, how you received that. And the other person can say, yes, that's right. You don't need to elaborate further. It's clear? So 3 minutes sharing and listening, then 1 minute of short feedback. There will be 4 minutes. And then we shift to the other turns, doing the same, but in the other direction, another 4 minutes. It's okay?
Will we make it with the same partner or guest?
No. So I will select the groups now. Let me put pause here. So here you are back. Against your wish, but sorry. I kidnapped you back here. So how did it feel to be heard and reflected back?
Oh.
Anyone would like to share some brief testimony? Briefly, so Katya.
I was actually very scared from the beginning. I said, oh, I got a new partner, so I was trying to. But then.
I put you a very nice part.
Yeah. You know, like opportunity open up.
Mm-hmm.
This is actually what I needed.
Mm-hmm.
It's to be at the momentum.
Yeah.
What will it bring? And when you don't have your or something conditions that you're starting to put, you see how fluid it is, and it's actually being received and being heard. And
you have a second microphone, Keshua Charya, to extend to them. Sorry, no, I forgot. Sorry, they want to interrupt.
Yeah, In my case, I was having the older sister that I had an older sister that I didn't have. So it's that friend that you said, like, you can call anytime. So, like, I kind of connected that figure and I said, wow, I can just be myself. I can just say the words I without like picking them, like choosing them, how to be, how to be better seen, you know. So this kind of honesty, this kind of just allowance to take a risk,
yeah,
and to be courage, to have a courage at the same time when the another person like accepted without conditions is just so beautiful.
Thank you for sharing. Someone else would like to give feedback. How did it feel to be heard and reflected back? On that side, I'm asking. Then I will ask to listen the other person, right? So how did it feel to be heard and reflected back?
I mean, now with this exercise, of course, I knew she will not respond. But just this knowing that the space will be open, it was very easy to open my heart. Because I mean, she would not say anything to it, so I could just say what I want to say, and then it has the space, and there will be nothing coming back. So this was very simple to open up. And then for the feedback or the summary, of course, I was curious if she now took the essence or how she reflects. So, yeah, but it intensifies the relationship.
Thank you. Someone else would like to share? It's not that everyone needs to share, but someone who feels inspired to do so, Kanupriya?
Yeah, I shared an experience which I just had, and I felt just looking in her eyes, and I felt, okay, she understood, and she was also moved, and this just this made this experience deeper, and somehow it expanded this positive experience.
Thank you. So what about feedback in the other direction? How did it feel to not only to understand, to listen, only to understand, not to fix, not to try to transform?
I noticed Maharaj that time. I wasn't responding by speaking or by planning what I wanted to say, but I couldn't help but give confirmations with my body and with nodding and with and I felt like even that got in the way of just being there and holding space.
Okay.
Somehow this, it just spontaneously came, this acknowledgement. But I think because Anshin and I, we were sharing the same thing, actually. So we were really feeling each other. And we're dear sisters, so your wicked plan didn't work.
You know the details of putting you together in that connection. Yeah.
So I just found that interesting that my body was still responding, which is a subtler form of giving verbal acknowledgement. I thought that stood out to me. But maybe that can't be helped.
Maybe I didn't clarify that, but it's okay if one is like nodding or something. Of course, it's not like to be okay forced. Like okay, I don't have to move any part of my body, and just because it can create more tension. So at least the verbal part to keep it quiet. That's something. Yeah.
But seeing Angela's eyes, watching me feeling her was very beautiful. Just witnessing that she felt so seen and heard. Very bonding and nourishing.
Thank you. Someone else would like to share feedback? Natalia, how did it feel to listen the other person, to receive the other person?
Sometimes I wanted to ask or make questions, but I find like inside of repeat some words that she said like before, and the best thing that repeating some words that stop my wanting to make impressions, but also let him speak.
Yeah.
Without
stopping. Thank you. Something else? Okay. Yes, Sundari.
Actually, I always do my own interpretation, and I try really to always go back and start to listen again.
Yeah, you are not alone in that, just in case. That's part of the exercise, right? That you realize, oh, still I'm bringing all these filters, and but it's good to gain awareness of that and work on that. Thank you. So yeah, this was a sorry. Oh, Patrick. Sorry.
Yeah, but also I mean, and relating with her because and probably with everyone because the very first few sentences of Keshavacharya, I was already interpreting, and then I realized, okay, well, it was not actually saying what I, you know, my mind was already making up. So then I could just listen carefully to what he was saying and pretty much catch everything. But of course, nodding and you know, gestures, etc., were coming. But it was really interesting to try to just, you know, don't say anything and listen. And that is also quite, it's not as simple as it sounds to articulate back in just a minute everything, and you are like, you know, trying to get back to everything, not miss everything. But it was really interesting, especially the listening side without replying or asking, and without making our own movie out of what the other person is saying. So, interesting exercise.
Yeah.
Okay. Thank you. And of course, something to say in this regard is that it's not only an exercise, right? It's an exercise, but you can extend that to your daily life and to your interactions. This is just a glimpse of how can we relate to each other, you know? How can we take this on another level in our daily life, in our relationships, and even if you're having in a partner dynamic, some conflicts, like, let's talk like this, and let me hear you. Even if it may sound a little forced in the beginning, like, sometimes it helps to be more present and just rather be carried away by what I'm projecting and interpreting. And sometimes these type of things are, okay, can you repeat what I just say to make sure you understand? And many times we realize, oh, I didn't listen to that person properly. Or maybe the person was not able to express themselves clearly enough, or both. But sometimes we need to take the time to make that clear, because if that doesn't happen, there's a distortion in the communication and we may take it personal. And why you think like that? And so we need to take the time to, I'm listening correctly. Let me get back to you what I'm receiving. But first I have to be there listening. Sometimes we do not even stop to listen to each other. So then imagine the feedback that comes from that. It's absolutely distorted. And no wonder then we feel I'm living with a stranger, or I'm with a person that doesn't get me at all. And the other person maybe thinks the same. So we need to sometimes lovingly force ourselves to enter more this type of quiet spaces of listening, receiving each other. So those are my thoughts for today. But if you have questions or something you would like to share before bringing a close, because I assume at one will be lunch. I'm just trying to honor the timings. I want to be respectful of our cooks.
I put Chamlal check.
That's in case. Chamlal Prabhu.
We also want to be respectful of your time, Maharaj, because we know you have.
I also have another lecture in between our lectures at 3. So, at 1, I need to be basically out.
Yes, I'm sure. For me, it's more like what. That for me has come afterwards, after I have listened. It's what I have not spoken of, because I wasn't aware of the feeling that was taking place until afterwards, what I didn't say.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't think we had enough time
mm-hmm.
to go into the real part of it. We're talking mostly superficially about things. So I couldn't, but now afterwards, I'm feeling what I didn't say.
Mm-hmm.
Because and the other thing is, I was trying too hard to listen.
Mm-hmm.
For my own body language, I was, instead of just relaxing,
That's why I say this was just an appetizer, a trailer. But if you want, you can feel free to continue talking during the day with the other people. I mean, again, it's not, oh no, it's only this exercise. Feel spontaneous and continue sharing. Katya first, raise her hand. Then we can go to Tantra Darshini and Patrick.
Maybe I'm looking for confirmation, but what's happening often in trying to explain what you feel or what you would like to share, and another person is perceiving or maybe thinking already like, okay, what is she willing to say, but making his own movie or her own movie. And these thoughts are might already be charged with some emotional states
mm-hmm.
that, so all this thinking and already feeling is creating certain, you know, atmosphere
mm-hmm.
And can be a barrier to mm-hmm. the, and even if you would say like, what did I say right now? Did you understand what I wanted to, what did they mean? And, but another person is already like charged with his or her movie or emotions, they're like, or saying something, or then it's like you are misunderstood. It's actually not what I wanted to say, or like it's a little bit of barrier to restore, to say, can we start again? Like, because we already, I could feel misunderstood or
yeah.
not heard.
Yeah.
Then another person might feel like, like she was thinking, because from the his own perspective.
Yeah.
So it's creating more misunderstanding than getting closer.
Yeah.
So like how, yeah, it's important probably to pay attention on that, to take completely out of what you think she
yeah.
of
yeah.
her wants
yeah.
to say. Just get a distance and then
yeah. Yeah, and of course
present.
It's yeah, and it's not easy. It's not like, okay, I will start a conversation with zero assumptions and projections. Probably that's not possible. You can try your best to do that. And even in that, you realize, oh, I'm still, that's part of the deconstruction process. And it can feel even humiliating at one point to witness, oh my gosh, I'm bringing so much baggage and biases and assumptions. But it's healthy to become aware of how many filters we have in between, and that's what's getting in the way of actually contacting the person. And again, part of the unconditional holding space is being open that that may happen and accompanying each other to gradually get rid of all that, which are masks in their own way. Right?
And increasing this willing to be more vulnerable, like to,
yeah.
not more, to be more vulnerable.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Gradually, that situation is not like concluded in the, let's say, best way possible.
Yeah, yeah, of course.
Then you feel like, oh, I'm not stood or off.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And don't become a cynic. Oh, no, it doesn't work because it didn't finish in the perfect. No, no, it's, we are trying our best, but if we are not work, we are not trained, so to say, in that exchange, we may need some time to really go deeper and deeper and deeper. So also, let's be patient and compassionate with one another in those processes of trying to listen to each other, because if we become impatient and we demand the other person, we are also, the same thing could be said to us. So it's always reciprocal. So we have to, yeah, at least if we are willing to do it. I mean, if the person is not willing, that's another thing. But if both parts are really open and willing, trying to grow into that, yeah, it deserves time. It's fine. Thank you. Patrick and Tattva Darshini, and probably we can conclude there. At least I need to do some other things, but you can continue. Always. Okay.
But Maharaj,
okay. Yeah, it's fine. It's fine.
Yeah, yeah, basically exactly what she said before. She mentioned now that comes to me the image, like, you know, here in an environment where you talk with somebody you don't know, or like Isha Acharya, we know each other, but there is no, I don't know, I see like a notebook, you know, like me and my wife know each other since so long, I try to write what I feel on a page that is already completely filled with, you know, with notes, and I give it to her, and of course she doesn't really understand what I wrote on top, while talking to somebody else is like writing on a blank page, and then of course the other one can understand. So it's yeah, just the image that came kind of difficult to turn page and write on a blank page, so that the other one can really understand.
Yeah, and what we say, sorry, before about respect, right? To look again the other person, like it's not easy, because again we all have relationship with people that we know each other for decades, or we live together, and it's that big temptation of I know you absolutely in every moment, which in one sense is true, but in one sense is not true, because still we are, if I say that, I'm putting that person in a box. I'm not giving the person a chance to not only to be more of what there are, but also to discover the other things that they are already are that I'm not seeing. Because we are missing so many parts of everyone, starting with ourselves. I want to speak with our potential, because we are someone, but we can become so much more. That's another conversation. That's the main theme of my third book, which is all about potential, not only seeing ourselves for who we are, but for all that we can be. No? Because sometimes generally, this is who you are, or we judge each other for what we did in the past. Yeah, I know you. You did this 20 years ago. You did this 10 years ago. You put in a box. There you are forever. But, or more generous, I don't judge you for who you were in the past, who you are now. Still, that's not so generous. We should see each other for all that we can become in potential, because that's how Krishna is seeing us. You know? All that we can be in potential, not only the mess that we still are in the present, so to say, all our bright potential. So we should treat each other, and it's not easy. Again, I never using the word easy. It's a struggle. It's difficult. Relations are complicated, but that's how we grow. If we escape from all that, we remain an infant forever. And that we don't want that. That's way more difficult. So let's better get into all the messiness and complexity of growing through relationships. And they're difficult because mostly in relationships, we are mirrored by the other person and shown our triggers and our unresolved stuff. And that's the challenge for us to grow and learn to love, basically, right? Because love is not a cheap word.
All right, you said that's the topic of your third book. That's the newest book?
That's the third one, yeah. Evolution in Divine Love, yeah. So, Tattva Darshan.
You have to be somewhere else.
It's okay. I don't need to be at 1 o'clock. Still, I have some time.
Sorry,
to share. 2 hours?
No.
Okay.
I just had an experience which is very nice, and I think it's related, because it can also help when I have a problem. I want somebody to respect, or also this was an exercise which I did with either students or a group or the whole class when there was a problem and I didn't catch what can I do. So what I did, and I can do it with every person, I was sitting down. And like it's like a cinema, the relying on the
screen,
watching like a silent movie. I see the person moving, maybe also speaking. And my only intention, my only question is inside is to watch and with the question, who are you? What do you need? And I watch. Really also silently listening, watching, perceiving. And there is a moment and you really perceive it as a, it's like enlightening. There's a light going on. So it's not about, oh yeah, it could be this. And I mean, no, it's not yet. I'm not yet there. When you know it, there's really a light going on. And in this moment also, I feel so much love.
and I see what is really the person.
Mm.
And in this moment, I'm in love.
Mm-hmm.
And I know exactly what I have to do. But the interesting point is every time the next day I went to school, I didn't have to do anything anymore. It already changed. Just because I perceived it in a new way, the love was flowing energetically, it was already gone.
Mm-hmm.
And there was once a girl, okay, she tried him, but I have seen through her mask a little child crying for love, even though she was elderly like this.
Mm.
And in this moment, I remembered this picture and I saw a little girl and she melted. I did not respond on her mask. And she melted away and it was very peaceful. Even though the school wanted to throw her out of school, but I didn't know. It's not about this. Mm-hmm. Look behind.
Mm-hmm.
And so this is what sometimes it's for me easier when I'm not so easily connecting with somebody. I take myself back, I go into this exercise, and then it's easier to approach again. Because sometimes when I speak with somebody, I'm feeling not understood, and then the struggle starts, and then it's difficult for me. But then I take myself out and do this exercise, and this is so helpful for me. And so this is maybe, yeah, also for one of you. You may take it and say, yeah, very nice. And this really, you feel it.
Mm-hmm.
And then I also feel it when you're speaking with a person, you feel the love. And then there's no doubt about, oh, how I'm listening enough or thinking about love, and I'm just in love.
Mm-hmm.
And then everything is so easy.
Thank you.
You're,
you're honoring your name, Tato Darshini. Saying Tatva is also a word for reality, right? And Darshini is the female of one who sees, no? Seeing reality for what it is. And I appreciated the point you made, Tatva Darshini, on sometimes taking a distance from a situation or a relationship to see it more clearly, no? Sometimes, and that's what how I understand the word detachment. Because detachment, sometimes we take it as indifference, rejection, but detachment is no. If I'm too close to something, is I'm disturbed. I'm not understanding what's going on. I need some distance, some perspective. No? I give the example sometimes of the hand. If my hand is too close, I lost sight of my hand. I no longer see the hand, so I need some distance. Oh, now I can see the hand for what it actually is. No? But it's a distance not to escape, but to actually see, respect, to see it again. So there's place for that in life and relationship dynamics when we can take distance. And in our tradition, we will hear, I don't know, Rupa Goswami will say, you love God, you establish friendship with devotees, you are compassionate to a newcomer, and you take some distance from those who are envious. But the distance is not about reject them, escape from them. You may need to take a distance to better understand what's behind their envy. You can be more compassionate and be more loving and connect, as you say, from a real place. And then maybe you need to get closer. Thank you for that. So yeah, a few thoughts we want to share today in the morning about this topic of holding space, compassionate listening, radical presence. And yeah, to conclude on this point, that holding spaces, we have some glimpses today. Hopefully we can continue to extend that. And it's a way of offering sanctuary in our presence. Like our presence can become sanctuary, can become a temple, can become sacred space, sacred time. We can offer sacredness to one another. And speaking about sanctuary and temple, our next topic today in the evening will be to speak about the body as a temple.
Mm-hmm.
So we'll try to address our physical existence dimension that many times, unfortunately, in spiritual circles had been rejected or downplayed or stigmatized or crucified or whatever, satanized, and try to reclaim and redeem the body as something sacred as well, as a temple. Mm-hmm. So that will be our topic today in the evening. So we'll do it, I think, a little bit later than yesterday, 1 hour later, if it's possible.
Yes.
At 6 instead of 5. No, so because I have this other lecture in between, so I have a few breaths in between. Thanks so much to all for your presence, for your listening, for your holding space. Shri Shri Radha Muralidhar ki jai, Shri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu ki jai, Shri Hari Naam Sankirtan ki jai, Gaur Premananda Hari Gaur, Panchakalpataru Vishchak, Pasindu Vyayi Vacha, Titanam Pavanevyo Vaishnavevyo Namo.